Crime on Campus, a special Terp Weekly Edition report.
I don't know if I feel safer, but I know how to protect myself better.
Prince George's County Police teach women how to avoid being victims of sexual assault.
And an update on a fraternity hazing story we brought you last week. Those stories and more are coming up. Terp Weekly Edition starts now.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Hello and welcome to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm April Failing.
And I'm John Wist. Just about everywhere you go on campus this semester, there's talk about the latest crime, from a peeping Tom to carjackings to assaults. It seems that crime is everywhere. But is it really? And how does crime on this campus compare to another of comparable size just up Interstate 95? I looked into it and have the answers in this Terp Weekly Edition special report.
Emergency lights, sirens, commonplace in areas with a large population, like the District of Columbia, which is only a few short miles away from campus. But it seems crimes, which are common in urban centers, are making their way onto campus with greater frequency. But does that perception accurately reflect what's really going on? Here's what some Maryland students have to say.
I think our crime rate is probably just the same as many, you know, large universities. If you consider the crime around campus, yeah, I think it's a little bit differently, especially with being located in D.C. where we are and having Baltimore close as well.
It's definitely happening, and it's definitely like always on my mind. And I always think about other colleges and how their students are able just to walk around and not really have to worry about crime or anything.
If you know the area and you know where College Park is placed in regard to the D.C. metro area, you should understand that's a pretty bad neighborhood that we're set in here.
We decided to compare crime on the College Park campus with that of Temple University in Philadelphia. Both schools have similar enrollments, similar tuition rates, and are located in urban areas. How do they stack up when it comes to crime? Well, in a side-by-side comparison of each school's 2006 crime report, Maryland reported 160 more burglaries, 20 more auto thefts, 4 more arsons, and over 200 more alcohol-related arrests. But that's not all. The College Park campus also had 170 more drug arrests and over 50 more forcible sex offenses than Temple reported. Temple only outpaced Maryland in the number of robberies and aggravated assaults. That means that in 6 out of 8 categories, Maryland reported more crime than Temple. It's important to keep in mind these numbers reflect only the crimes reported to campus police. These are separate from arrests or convictions. And Maryland criminology professor Thomas Moriello says that's an important distinction.
It's all about how much crime gets reported. I personally don't think the crime rate on campus is that bad, because we're talking about a very congested community.
Moriello has been keeping watch on crime in and around College Park for more than 30 years. Moriello, whose full-time job is now with the Department of Defense, became a university police officer in 1973. He's been an instructor with the university's Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice for 3 decades. Moriello says crime has always been a part of this college town.
In the 70s, mid-70s, I was investigating all rapes. And now, when I say we had a lot, I'm saying to you, a lot was, you know, we might have one every couple of months. We had women who were raped in women's bathrooms. We had 2 rapes in the same bathroom within a week apart.
The 70s were a much different time, Moriello says. Buildings weren't as tightly secured, the campus wasn't patrolled as heavily, and the police department had less resources. The one thing that hasn't changed, he says, is the fact that students believe the college is isolated and protected from the real world.
Students tend to believe when they walk on campus, they're protected by this glass glow. I remember meeting rape victims in the hospital. On several occasions, I had victims say, I can't believe this happened to me on campus. Well, why not? Why can't you believe that?
And for that reason, says Moriello, awareness and education are critically important.
Crime prevention is nothing but common sense, and it's just doing things that you know you should do. You know, for example, this is not a sexist thing, but if women don't want to get assaulted late at night on this campus, there's a number of things that they need to do. They need to walk and piss.
But Moriello is convinced that crime will never disappear. He says it's something the public has to learn to live with.
People truly believe that you should be able to eliminate crime, and you don't eliminate crime. There's no such thing as that. You control it, you know, and again, you move it.
And, says Moriello, the university is doing a good job of preventing crime.
One crime is too much, so again, as a father who has a daughter on this campus, a person who's been teaching here, been a member of the police officer, I'm not concerned that we're not doing the right kinds of things. Crime is a part of society.
Moriello says students and parents have to accept that crime is a reality. But with awareness and education, you can reduce your chances of becoming a victim.
While many in the College Park area are increasingly worried about crime, crime has actually gone down in Prince George's County. Police Chief Melvin High says violent crime is down nearly 8%, and property crime is down 1.5% this quarter. Also down, rapes by more than 6%, and carjackings by almost 32%. The chief credits the decrease to initiatives put in place 2 years ago. Those efforts included increasing the number of officers and stepping up traffic enforcement. The department also deployed special tactical teams, one focused on carjacking, another on violent crimes.
Police have released a composite sketch of a man they believe sexually assaulted a woman last month. Police say the victim was walking along Knox Road when she noticed three men following her on the opposite side of the road. One of the men crossed Knox, pushed the victim against a car, pulled down the top to her Halloween costume, and fondled her. Police say the victim was able to get a good look at her attacker and gave them a detailed description for the sketch. To see the sketch, visit our website at www.twe.umd.edu.
A recent series of sexual assaults and peeping Tom incidents in and around campus has many women in College Park on edge. They're worried about how to avoid becoming a victim and what to do if they're attacked. They got some answers last Tuesday, thanks to a safety awareness program for women only, presented at Ritchie Coliseum by the Prince George's County Police Department. Terp Weekly Edition's Susan Frentz was there.
The session started out with a bang and a mock theft by an officer in plain clothes. District 1 Commander Major Kevin Davis explains the significance of the demonstration.
That's how fast one of these things can happen. That's how fast it probably happened last Saturday night when we had the 4th-degree sex offense in College Park on Knox Road.
Davis also updated the crowd of 60 participants on the Peeping Tom investigation.
We have exhausted all our resources with the registered sexual offenders in this area. They don't fit the profile for this particular suspect. They're generally older, white males, older black males.
He encouraged students to call with tips on the man's identity. But the real focus this night was on preventing women from becoming victims. Cheryl Banks is a community educator on sexual assault with Prince George's County Hospital.
Most rapes occur between two people who know one another. And guess what else? Alcohol or drugs are involved. When people are too drunk or too high to give consent, someone can take advantage of that vulnerability.
Banks added that multitasking activities like talking on a cell phone or listening to an iPod can also reduce awareness and make women vulnerable. But what should you do if you are attacked? Brian Enlich from the Prince George's County Sheriff's Department offered advice on escaping an attack.
He locks my arms down. You have knee strikes to the groins. Remember, men are vulnerable there. They're trying to take advantage of you because of vulnerability. Take advantage of them. Just lower your center, get your hips out of the way, strike them in the groin.
Pepper spray is another way to fend off an attack, but Lieutenant Efren Diaz says you have to carry the right kind.
At least 5% concentration. Don't get sucked into the percentages. All that is how long the effects will burn if it's not washed off. And make sure that your product has at least 1 million SHU. That's what makes the pepper hot.
If an assault does occur, Prince George's Hospital's Cheryl Banks says women should not shower, eat, or drink anything, or go to the bathroom, and a victim should contact police immediately. But do students feel safer after the presentation?
I don't know if I feel safer because the campus is still the same, but I know how to protect myself better.
I would say that the two police departments, Prince George's County and then also our campus police, are taking the steps to make it safer.
The Prince George's County Police Department is also planning a self-defense class for the spring. In College Park, I'm Susan Frentz, Terp Weekly Edition.
In two different incidents, two University of Maryland students were found dead in their on-campus residences last week. On Tuesday, the body of Brian Massoff was found by police locked in his room in the Courtyard Apartments. His girlfriend phoned police because she could not find him. Massoff was a DJ at WMUC. His weekly show aired Mondays from 10 p.m. to midnight. Adam Weiner is WMUC's station manager.
You can never ever see that kind of thing coming. You can know a kid as well as you want. When I got a call about it, it was just a complete, I was like, no, you're lying, it's not true.
Police are awaiting autopsy results to determine Massoff's cause of death, but they say there appears to be no foul play. Then, shortly before 4 a.m. on Thursday morning, freshman Lance Healy was discovered dead in a high-rise dorm room by his roommate. Healy lived on the 7th floor of Centerville Hall, and his death was ruled as suicide by the state medical examiner.
Now, an update on a story we first brought you last week concerning a suspected case of hazing involving a campus fraternity. Zeta Beta Tau's National Executive Director, John Eulish, tells Terp Weekly Edition their investigation into the matter is now complete. But Eulish declined to provide any details other than to say the organization would soon be determining the sanctions against ZBT's Maryland chapter. Those sanctions will include both penalties and education measures to prevent a repeat of the incident. Eulish declined to say if they've determined whether the incident last month was a case of hazing. Hazing is illegal in Maryland, and penalties can include fines or imprisonment. University police spokesman Paul Dillon says the police have not been asked to investigate.
In his annual speech to the Student Government Association, President Dan Mote says his plan to bring a light rail through the campus is better for the university. Maryland Transportation Authority has a plan for the Purple Line at the university, but Mote says that plan is not pedestrian friendly.
I'm going to be dead, actually, by the time this thing gets built, okay? So there's no way that this can bother me at all in terms of what actually is going to happen. But I don't want, in the future, even dead, I don't want people to look back and say, back there, back in 2007, those guys allowed this thing to happen. How could they be so stupid?
Mote also says the university will make more efforts to become environmentally friendly. This includes buying foods from local farms and constructing green-minded buildings.
It seems very important for the university to be out in the front end of this whole thing, not kind of following along and figuring out what happened next.
SGA legislators suggested to Mote that the campus should be more accommodating to bikers to cut the number of cars at the university.
Coming up, Democrats and Republicans battle it out, but not in the polls. And how one performing artist uses music to cope with some recent tragedies. This is Terp Weekly Edition. Some better news for the university's athletic department this week concerning graduation rates for student athletes. Just a few weeks ago, a federal report showed that none of the players on the Terps men's basketball team who entered school between 1997 and 2000 graduated within the NCAA's six-year window. But an even newer report from the NCAA itself shows that overall during the same time period, Maryland scholarship athletes posted a 78% graduation success rate. That rate is above the national average and the athletic department's best performance in 3 years. Associate Athletics Director Anton Goff says this latest report better reflects the real picture for student athletes. But he says they're continuing to provide all the support they can to the men's basketball team to bring their graduation rates up.
We've got an academic counselor who works just with men's basketball, travels with them on the road. We've instituted a learning specialist who works with them on tutoring, time management, organizational skills, those type of things. And then we've kind of changed the way those guys are taking classes where they take more than just the 12 credits to be full-time. They actually take 15 per semester.
Despite Maryland's improved performance and the latest report from the NCAA, the university still came in third from the bottom in the ACC. Only NC State and Georgia Tech had lower scores.
The state legislature is now meeting in special session, trying to come up with a way to deal with Maryland's nearly $2 billion shortfall. What they decide could impact tuition for students at colleges and universities throughout the state. Last week, students rallied in Annapolis in support of Governor O'Malley's plan to increase higher education funding by raising money for colleges and universities through an increase in the corporate tax. The governor spoke to the crowd.
We cannot become a great state unless the children of the working families of Maryland can afford to go to college here in the state of Maryland.
Although O'Malley says he plans to make sure college tuitions don't go up, some students who attended the rally are still worried.
I would hate to not be able to finish out my education due to an increase in tuition or to even have further debt.
I would have to be taking more loans, and also I would have to be definitely working more.
It's very important for students to care about this issue. Plus, if we don't and it doesn't happen, all of our tuitions will go up. and we'll start caring about it then.
O'Malley's bill would boost the corporate income tax from 7 to 8% starting in 2008. It would also close loopholes which allow some businesses to avoid taxes. Business groups argue that raising the corporate tax would actually drive business away from the state. Don Cherie White contributed to this report.
Democrats and Republicans have been facing off in Annapolis and Capitol Hill for decades. But here in College Park, a recent battle is going to the gridiron. The College Democrats and the College Republicans faced off on La Plata Beach for their first ever football scrimmage for charity. Terp Weekly Edition's Eric Schaefer was there.
It's red versus blue, elephant versus donkey, the GOP versus...
You get the idea.
The point of the scrimmage, Republican Nikhil Verma says, was to bring the two clubs together.
You get bipartisan fun and everything.
But it was still competitive. Both parties tried to outsmart the other.
Go, Dems. Watch out for the push-pull.
Excuse me. What?
Wait. He's just going to run. He's going to, like, run.
Yeah, keep turning
around after 5 seconds.
Okay. All right. 1, 2, 3.
Break.
80 cross, Z right.
Shut up.
Dolphin flip.
Intersection of Puerto Rico. All right, ready? Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Who's got Merriman?
The game had people switching parties, too. One Democrat was traded to the Republicans because they were a man short.
I don't understand. It's like the Wizards trading Gilbert, but we played a good game.
There wasn't much political trash talking during the game, but afterwards, they couldn't help it.
The only one of the main Democrats I really don't like is John Edwards.
He's so hot.
I know.
He's so hot.
I can't vote for a guy who, like, who's at this here more than I do.
One even grabbed my microphone to make a point.
There would not be football without Joshua Gilliman. Joshua Gilliman is the face of College Democrats football. No, I am not a role model. Yes, you should buy my shoes. Thank you. Good night.
The College Democrats ended up beating the Republicans. The final score? Everyone lost track. But the most important stat of the game was 350. That's the amount of money the clubs will donate to local troops serving in Iraq. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Eric Schaefer in College Park.
College Park City Council elections are being held this week. Though the mayor and candidates in two districts are running unopposed, the race is on for seats in District 1 and 2. Tune in next week for the results.
Last week, wildfires killed at least 14 people, destroyed more than 2,000 homes, and scorched over 800 square miles in California, mainly in San Diego. Terp Weekly Edition's Kim Kaplan sat down with a student who calls that region home.
Marguerite Rosenthal, a senior at the University of Maryland, is from eastern San Diego. As wildfires ravaged her home county, Marguerite was all the way across the country trying to get news about her home.
There actually was not a lot of coverage on TV out here. And the only coverage was of the Malibu fires, and they really only focused on, like, the celebrities that had to evacuate. So I mostly just asked my parents and read the San Diego papers online.
Luckily, Marguerite's home was not affected by these fires. But it's a frightening experience she knows only too well.
It was kind of scary because this actually happened 4 years ago when I was a senior in high school, and then we had to evacuate our house, so I knew exactly what was going on and like what my family was probably feeling. You feel helpless, like there's absolutely nothing you can do.
Marguerite says that helplessness was made even worse by being so far from home.
I still have some things back in my house that I felt like I'd wanted to call them and like tell them what of mine I wanted them to save, but then I felt like a jerk for thinking that because things were really bad.
She says one of the hardest things about being in Maryland during the fires was that many people here were oblivious to what was happening.
I know the friends I have who knew what was going on when they, you know, asked me about it. Like, it felt good to know that they were aware that, you know, there was something that was concerning me, whereas most of my friends had absolutely no idea.
Marguerite says the best way to help understand what she and others are going through is to take a few minutes to learn about the wildfire situation on a larger scale.
I mean, because it's not the same as like Hurricane Katrina, where it was completely unexpected and they had absolutely no way to handle it. San Diego has fires every year. It's just sometimes they get really out of control. So things were pretty calm there as far as evacuations. And people have like fire insurance, so they don't really need, you know, tons and tons of money.
Marguerite says now the focus will be on rebuilding, cleaning up the ash, and replanting the agriculture that's been destroyed. In College Park, I'm Kim Kaplan for Terp Weekly Edition.
The losses from the Southern California fires are still being tallied, but the impact from other recent tragedies, like the murders at Virginia Tech, Hurricane Katrina, and 9/11, are still being felt. Last Thursday night, musicians and poets at the Nemburu Cultural Center used their art to reflect on recent tragedies and loss. But this night had two purposes. it was also intended to promote the extended residency of musician Dr. Daniel Bernard Rumain, known for his mix of funk, rock, hip-hop, and classical music. In his recent piece, One Loss Plus, Rumain reflects on the good that can come from loss, a theme Terp Weekly Edition's Shira Yudkoff says came through loud and clear with last week's performance.
When you listen to a story told through art, it's hard to forget. Pianist Brenton Anderson, who plays in the university's Nimburo Jazz Club, believes that tragedy and sadness are best conveyed through music.
Grief is one of life's most complex emotions, and art, any type of art, especially music, is one way that you can capture grief and convey the depth of it. You can capture it in a way that other people can feel it, and they can almost sympathize with you.
Co-directors of the program, Jermaine Lewis and Naima Jamal, remind the audience that tonight's program is a way of coping with events, like the appearance of a noose this semester outside the Nimburo Cultural Center, which some consider a hate crime.
It's about making sure that people are constantly exposed and that incidents don't just happen and run away. This is one of the ways that we're dealing with it artistically.
Freshman Adara Einikin says her poem has a similar theme to Dr. Rumain's composition, One Loss Plus. Einikin says she, like Romaine, had to lose a part of herself to gain something new.
The new me resurrected rose up from under the world's weights, its burdens. Yes, the world's burning, yep, going to hell. And for me to stay real, to tell you the truth, I was going there too. If I just took one step to the left, that would have been my death. So I slid to the right, happened to step in the light, and now there's a new me.
Ome Kongo Dibanga, a PhD student in the International Education Policy Program at the university, challenged the audience to also remember the tragedies that go unreported. He recites his poem, Welcome to the Congo.
Child soldiers fighting in fear of retribution on their families, joining the spread of violence, raping my mother country and spilling her black culture blood only continues through violence. When I talk to you about family genocide, what's the compliance, your response?
The inspiration behind this performance, Daniel Bernard Rumain, will be performing his work, One Loss Plus, this March at the Clarice Smith Performing Arts Center. For Terp Weekly Edition, this is Shira Yudkoff, College Park.
Still to come, helping students from diverse backgrounds find their place on campus. And a little taste of summer finds its way to College Park. That's next. This is Terp Weekly Edition.
Is giving the university $600,000. The money is coming from the Fundamental Aeronautics Program, which conducts what NASA describes as cutting-edge research to design vehicles able to fly through any atmosphere at any speed. It also seeks to advance technologies that help reduce noise, emissions, and fuel consumption. The award will enable close collaboration between researchers at NASA, academics at Maryland, and the government.
The University of Maryland system is one of 19 state university systems to sign on to a nationwide plan to increase access to and performance in higher education for low-income and minority students. The initiative, dubbed Access to Success, was announced last Wednesday by the National Association of System Heads. The plan aims to close the gap between the disadvantaged students and all other students by cutting the distance between their success rates in half or more by 2015.
College Park takes great pride in the diversity of its students. A diverse population is one thing, but actually knowing something about the students on campus with their varied backgrounds is something else. Some of these students come to the university from other countries, countries where liberties that we enjoy in the U.S. can only be imagined. This week, Terp Weekly Edition's Nkechi Magekwu begins a special three-part series, introducing us to some special students and their extraordinary stories.
Well, I was born in southern Sudan, a place called Yoro, and in 1983, the war broke out.
Amal Atiyo, a pre-law student, was only 8 when he felt the effects of war in his native Sudan. His family's cattle ranch was attacked by the Muslim Janjaweed militia, resulting in him running away with over 20,000 children across southern Sudan into Ethiopia, making sure that they traveled at night.
Because during the day, they will come with the airplanes. Those airplanes were actually donated by Saddam Hussein.
death from the air was not their only problem.
No food, no water. We would drink our urine. We eat some leaves, sometimes wet mud. So it's water and water dry. It's still wet.
4 years after taking refuge in Ethiopia, they were turned away and eventually landed in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya, where with the help of the UN, filing processes began to take some of the children to America. Meanwhile, during this time, Sierra Leone was beginning to experience its deadliest rebel fighting yet.
You go to school, you live life as a kid, nothing to worry about.
Everything changed for government and politics major Emmanuel Thompson in 1998, when civil war started in the diamond-rich region of Sierra Leone, claiming over 50,000 lives.
I was staying in basements of various houses, moved from place to place. It was me and my family, you know.
As the rebels began their rituals of cutting the limbs of people, life for Emmanuel, though not as gruesome as Amal's, took its toll.
You have no access to water, no access to food. You go for like weeks without food. There were times I was passing by, you know, you just see like dead people like lying on the streets, and these are like some people who you know, you know.
But what happens when they come to America? How do they adjust? Tune in next time as we soak up the experiences of immigrants and the difficulties of adjusting to a new life. For Top Prickly Edition, this is Nkechi Mogeko.
With most of the semester behind us, finals aren't far away, and with them, a chance for students to fill out the usual end-of-semester instructor evaluations. Every class on campus is supposed to do them, but there's no consistency in the questions on those forms. That's about to change. A new online system-wide evaluation is about to kick in. But Terp Weekly Edition's Eric Schaefer says there may be bugs in the system right from the start.
Edesua Izevike from the SGA says she didn't like having a different evaluation form for every class.
I'll go into one class and I'm filling out a Scantron with like 50 questions, and then I go to another class and it's writing out essays on a sheet of paper, and there's no consistency.
It's why the university is moving to a campus-wide course evaluation, something the SGA proposed in 2000. The new system sets up a basic formula for questions to be used in all departments. Director of Planning and Assessment, Sharon Lavoie.
Whether the syllabus was clear, whether the instructor respected students, whether they were good teachers, etc. Things that you'd expect from a course evaluation.
And here's the kicker. The evaluation, says coordinator Renee Bard-Snyder, makes it a two-way street for students.
The students will be able to see the results to all of those seven items for any course on campus, as long as 70% or more of the students in that course have completed the course evaluation.
A new website, rumd.com, also offers students a chance to evaluate courses. And not only does the site give students an opportunity to rate these classes and professors, but students can provide comments on them too. The SGA asked one of the co-founders, Mike McKay, to link the university evaluations on his website. But he said no.
If we could reach a mutually beneficial agreement, then that would be good. But we weren't going to just link to their site with no benefit to our site or our site's users.
But the SGA's Izevike thinks the two can coexist.
They both offer different things to the students, so I don't see why there's a problem for them both being in existence. I don't see any reason why people have to choose either or.
Evaluations start after Thanksgiving and run until the end of classes. I'm Eric Schaefer, Terp Weekly Edition, College Park.
Looking for a little variety in your usual dining habits? Two new restaurants have just opened along Route 1 in College Park. Ivory Cafe, specializing in Jamaican cuisine, opened last month. And just last week, Eats, a self-proclaimed greasy spoon, catering to those who aren't afraid of some cholesterol-busting, fattening fried food, opened its doors. Eats menu features burgers, steak sandwiches, onion rings, and french fries. Manager Matt Bronder says he hopes Eats becomes a favorite spot for students with late-night hunger pangs.
As fall takes over and winter approaches, the beach and beach weather seem very far away, but a new donut shop is bringing the taste of summer to College Park. Terp Weekly Edition's Ross Masco has more on an Ocean City favorite making the move to campus.
The first thing you notice when you walk into the Fractured Prune is the smell. It reminds you almost of carnival funnel cake frying away. But the Fractured Prune is very different from traditional donut shops. Owner Ted Kaufman explains.
The Fractured Prune is famous for their hot hand-dipped donuts made to order while you wait. We have 15 different glazes, 10 different toppings, 3 different sugars. You create your own donut, or you can pick and choose from one of our creations. There's 20 of those.
A unique name for a unique store. The fractured prune was named after Prunella Shriek, a 70-year-old woman who, in the late 1890s, would compete with men in sports, often getting injured. She became affectionately known as Fractured Prunella. The fractured prune also has a special greeting for new customers.
If you've never been in our place before, our policy is you get a first-time donut. We give you an OC sand donut because we originated in Ocean City, Maryland. So we brought part of the beach to College Park.
Junior Andy Bratton decided to try out the new shop.
What donut did you get?
The OC sand. It's the hot. That's just really good.
How does it compare to other donuts that you've had?
They've actually had a hot donut.
So how do they stack up to other donuts?
Definitely fresher. Most donuts that I've had don't have a crispy shell. You can tell these have just been fried. They like crunch and bite into them. They're like, it seriously does like, just like fall apart in your mouth.
For Ted Kaufman, watching a first-timer is the reason he makes donuts.
I had one lady describe it as a TBO. And I said, what's a TBO? And she goes, it's a taste bud orgasm. Every time people bite into one of our donuts, and it's like, wow, they've never had anything like us before. And they probably will never have a donut as good as ours.
Kaufman says besides enjoying his donuts, students should do one thing when they come into his store.
Enjoy the atmosphere. Feel like you're part of Ocean City again. We're all about the beach. We're all about the boardwalk.
This location is one of 19 others all over the East Coast, with one as far west as Ohio. Kaufman says his goal is to become part of the College Park community. The Fractured Prune is located on Route 1 by Quiznos and Pita Pit. In College Park, I'm Ross Masco, Terp Weekly Edition.
That's all for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm John Wist.
And I'm April Failing. For more from Terp Weekly Edition, visit us on the web at www.twe.umd.edu. And don't forget to check out our podcast. Thanks for listening.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.